The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1137. It's the 8th of August 2018. On the podcast today, I have Andrew Knott, Chief Executive Officer of Savannah Petroleum. And Andrew discusses the signature of a legally binding memorandum of understanding between them and the Republic of Niger. Also on the podcast, Ed Dawson, Chief Executive Officer of Prospect Oil and Gas. PXOG is ticker there. And Ed gives an operational update on its interest in Romania, Italy and Spain. Plus, Roger Murphy, Chief Executive Officer of African Battery Metals, ABM is ticker there. Roger talks about the proposed acquisition of Cobalt Blue Holdings, Regent Resources interests, conditional placing, and capital reorganization. And I also have on Dr. Dan Gooding, Chief Executive Officer of New Formix, NFX is the ticker there. And New Formix, by the way, is a pharmaceutical development company using co-crystal technology. And Dan gives an update on their lead products. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum. SAVP is the ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
And you've got a stream of positive news coming out of the company there in the last few weeks, which is very impressive. And today's no excuse. We'll go into the MOU you've signed in a bit, the details of that. Before we do, Andrew, if someone's listening to this and have not heard of the company, could you summarise what you're all about, please?
Yeah, so Savannah is a UK-listed company. We've been listed for around 4 years now. We're focused around two countries, Niger and Nigeria. In Niger, we have an exploration business, which we're about to talk about, is about to move into the development and production phase. And then in Nigeria, we have we're in the process of acquiring interests in large producing oil and gas fields. And so that's where we are. We have two large assets, both of which have a lot of upside.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've announced today you've signed a memorandum of understanding with the Republic of Niger. Could you explain what this means, the significance of this, and what it means going forward, please, Andrew?
Okay, so in Niger, we have 50% of the main petroleum basin under license. We spent the last couple of years doing a lot of work in terms of understanding the asset and the geology, and then we started our drilling campaign in March. By starting the drilling campaign, we've now drilled three wells with three discoveries, and we've got a very large bank of additional prospects that we intend to drill over the coming months. The key thing there is we can find as much of the stuff as we want, but unless we manage to get it into production, it's clearly not worth anything. And this is the second significant announcement about how we intend to monetize our discoveries. So a couple of weeks ago, there was the signature between the governments of Niger and Nigeria about exporting crude from Niger into northern Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And today there's a specific MOU whereby the government has undertaken to facilitate our access to infrastructure and a sales point at the refinery, an existing refinery in Niger called the Zinder Refinery, which will enable us to proceed with an early production system and deliver the cash flows and production from the discoveries that we've made in quite a quick time frame. So I think it's very important for us because it gives us a clear line of sight in terms of how we will do our early production system. The early production system that we're doing is economically significantly superior to that which we'd previously updated the market on, which involved trucking crude about 700 kilometres from the Agadem Rift Basin, which is where we are, to a refinery in northern Nigeria. This way, you're looking at a 60 to 70 kilometre trucking piece from the discovery to the existing pipeline. That existing pipeline will then transport the crude to the refinery. The other advantage of the solution is that it's very capex light. It's primarily focused around leasing and tariffing to get in, which again is from an NPV perspective very helpful. I think we've previously talked about an expectation of being able to generate NPVs of $6 to $8 a barrel from this. From a structure such as this. So I think it should provide everyone with a clear demonstration of the value of what we're managing to do in this year.
Yeah. And do you have, I mean, you said it, obviously you're looking for near-term production and cash flows here. So do you have any kind of time frame in mind?
So what we've committed to formally is that within 90 days of signature of the MOU, we will submit a pre-feasibility study to the government. And then within 90 days of finalising the commercial agreements, the infrastructure access agreements, which the government's agreed to assist in the facilitation of, we will formally provide our full field development plan. The important thing is that the way we're intending to do the well testing, which we've been relatively clear about, is we intend to do a completion such that we'll be able to produce straight away from the well test, i.e. we won't need to go back and put in more kit. And therefore, from a doability perspective, we should be able to do that in a relatively quick time frame. But I think today's not the day we're going to give the full guidance in terms of the time frame and the engineering and all the rest of it. That will come through. We will be providing that, but I think we're a month or two away from providing that full guidance. But it's clearly a significant milestone, and I think people should be able to see the direction of travel here.
Absolutely. And is that also, I mean, when will you know sort of exactly how much you'll be hoping to produce in there? When will you sort of have an angle on this?
Well, there's between 5,000 to 7,000 barrels a day of spare capacity in the refinery. So clearly, I think you would view that as the target over the near to medium term to be able to satisfy. But in terms of the exact phasing of production, et cetera, again, we need a couple of months just to confirm that out.
Okay, marvellous stuff. Well, it's all going well. Like I said, you've had three successes out of three wells drilled. So apart from, you know, completing this MOU and doing this, what's next on the exploration horizon, Andrew?
Okay, so we're currently drilling a well called Eridale 1, which is which is in close proximity to the existing discoveries. We then have, we then have options to continue to drill. If we were to exercise those options, there's another very strong prospect which you'd like to drill called Zomo 1. And then I think you can assume that there is additional upside on the AMD discovery, which we'd like to drill out, test, and also to put in preparation for production. So that's sort of, I think you will continue to see us drill. Were we to exercise the options, I think you can expect that we'll continue to focus around the R3 East area. And the risk profile on the wells, they're no different from the wells that we've drilled historically in our view. Mm. In terms of outside of the sort of the drilling news flow and the sort of the early production news flow, we'll then have a lot going on in Nigeria. There'll be an update on sort of the closure of the 7 deal sooner rather than later, which I think will provide people with a lot of comfort. And then in terms of that business itself's in a very strong position to deliver resource and production adds, and we'll be discussing how that will happen over the course of the next couple of months. So I think in both businesses there's quite a lot of news flow that we're anticipating to give people.
Absolutely. Well, Andrew, one final thing to do, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you're making there, it's been very positive, especially in the last few weeks, months. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think that the first one is we've got interest in two very high quality businesses, both of which have very strong upside, which is coming from identifiable high quality assets. So I think that's sort of the fundamental reason. And then in terms of this, the sort of the near term delivery of that in relation to the Nigerian business, as I said, we'll be updating in terms of the 7 deal sooner rather than later. And then in terms of the the Nigerian business, you'll get all this news flow to come in terms of the early production system, and the drilling program which we're prosecuting on. And the one last thing I'd like to say, Justin, is that for people that would like that are interested in what we're doing, and I realise we're in jurisdictions which aren't necessarily covered by the mainstream media, our Twitter account at Savannah Petrol is starting to show a lot of information around the projects that we're doing, which I think people will find quite helpful. So I'd encourage anybody to follow us on Twitter. It's a very good source of news for us.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks very much for that, Andrew. And listen, hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
I hope so too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, CEO of Prospects Oil & Gas. That's PXOG. Ed, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, and thank you for asking me.
No problem. We know we've had several sort of shareholders getting in contact saying, let's get Ed on for an update, because I know things are happening in the background. Sometimes you can't RNS them as yet, but there are things going on. For example, like today, we've seen a non-executive director buy some shares. I knew you bought some shares recently, so we'll go into that in a bit. But before we go into the details of what's happening, Ed, on your projects, explain, for someone listening right now, not familiar with the company, summarise in a minute or less Prospects Oil & Gas, please.
We're an AIM investment company that specializes in oil and gas. The company is run by a very strong management team. We've done it on several occasions before in the private markets as opposed to the public. And now we're in the process of building up a portfolio of gas assets in Europe. And we're looking to be a mid-sized oil and gas company with half a dozen key assets.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, like I said, some shares are bought by non-executive director. I think you took part, about a month ago, was it? You bought some shares?
Yeah, I bought some a month ago. And James Smith, one of our non-execs, who's a very strong technical background, has bought some yesterday and also bought some a month ago.
Excellent stuff. Well, okay. Well, so you've got three projects going on, Romania, Italy and Spain. Let's touch on Romania first. What's happening there at the moment, Ed?
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably what the market is waiting for. Just short of 1 year ago when we announced that we'd farmed into a block in Romania. Since then, we've drilled it, and we had good success there, and we are very close now getting on production. We had previously guided quarter two. We changed that guidance to quarter three recently. We were delayed on a couple of permits, but the permitting continues to steam ahead. And Q3 is looking very strong.
Okay, and what do you know about this prospect then?
There's a geological concept across our portfolio. We're chasing the four deep. It's a shallow gas reservoir. It's very close to existing infrastructure, and it's a number, potentially a number of lookalikes in the block. For us, it was a demonstration of geological concept to the market, and we look to move ahead on the block, chasing similar things with our partners.
Okay, and you say that action time is Q3, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff.
The permitting is moving along nicely. The gas pipe has been bought. The gas pipe is in the field. And the guys are starting to stick it together with a view to ultimately burying it in the ground and connecting it all up.
Good stuff. Okay. Let's move to Italy then, and take us through anything happening there at the moment.
Well, yes. A couple of months ago, we announced that we were moving what was part of the exploration area into a production concession. Our partners have submitted that, and that will be considered in due course by the Italian authorities. So, again, to remind listeners, we had a drill in December. It was flow tested in January, and you know the flow tests were multiples of what we and the partnership were expecting. So that's good, and is now you know, firmly on track now to be a highly productive gas concession for us and our partners in Italy. So that's good.
Yeah, and also in Italy, there are other sort of exploration targets, aren't there?
Yeah, so we drilled a thing called Selva, and on east of there is a thing, not unsurprisingly, called East Selva, and that has a CPR on it of a mid-case of, I think, 34 BCF. Selva itself is approximately half of that. So with the partnership is, you know, discussing further seismic to open up East Selva and actually a number of other small prospects in around the whole structure. It's really good. I mean, when we look at projects, we like to have a quick entry, a quick bang for our buck for the shareholders, but also, you know, we're looking to build on sort of hubs of existing infrastructure, and so that's great, yeah.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and finally, Spain. What is happening in Spain?
Spain. So we have the right to take 49% of a project there. We got involved with a group, Australian group called Petrel Energy. We've been asked to come in and rejuvenate it. They've seen our success in drilling wells in Europe and also, you know, chasing this geological play. So over the summer, there's a number of things happening in the field. And we're also, one of the things is an MT survey, and the second thing is having the field work done, which forms part of an EIA report, and that is ultimately part of the drilling permissions. We want to go and effectively twin a well that was drilled in the 50s. It's our firm belief that a modern well using modern muds and such like drilled, at balance or slightly under balance, you know, will enable this thing to flow and flow nicely. So Spain is all about building up to proving that we have a CPR out there which talks about 800 BCF as a mid case. So what we're trying to do is de-risk that and move towards that numbers. So potentially it's very, very large. But in Spain, you have to be careful. You have to show, try and avoid being, you know, some companies that certainly in the past have been arrogant. That doesn't go down well with the locals or the authorities. So my recent trip to Spain was actually, the primary focus of that was a launch of the project in the local community. You know, they're the guys who, if they're on board, will make land access and such like a downside, more easy and help the project go. So that happened. It was actually, in my mind, a huge success. The county mayor came along and is firmly behind the project. We weren't expecting him at the meeting, but he pulled up a chair to the top table and, launched it. Told the locals, it's not fracking, he wouldn't be there if it was fracking, and all that sort of thing. So, it's a very much an exciting conventional project. So these, they're key stages of rejuvenating this project. Go and chase this very large prize.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And, of course, essential, isn't it, to get local support in the community there?
Yeah. I mean, it's hugely hindering if you don't.
Yeah, yeah. And just reading with interest there, Ed, you've been covered by, obviously, Peterhouse give you covering, and it's quite a decent bit of upside there. They give you a target of 2.2 pence per share, haven't they? Which is a decent upside if you look at the moment, 0.35 you are at the moment. So they obviously see the potential there.
I think they've done a good, interesting, fair bit of work, and it's enabling shareholders or potential shareholders to hang their coat on some numbers. So, no, I think that's a great piece of work. And we, the management team, have always believed that, you know, we've got deep value in the story. And, you know, time will out. That's great.
Yeah. Well, hence why you've been buying stock, I suppose. So, okay, well, listen, Ed, if someone's listening, likes the sound of this, and, you know, they're not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
I firmly believe there's deep value in the story. I think production coming on in this quarter will, you know, confirm to people that, you know, we are a good management team, sensible operators. And, you know, we are, as I say, a strong management team who've done this before. So, get to the bottom.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Ed, good to chat to you. And, like you say, not far off from some action happening there in Romania. So, hopefully, we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Roger Murphy, CEO of African Battery Metals, ABM ticker. Roger, thanks for joining me.
Justin, good to chat again. It's been a while.
Yeah, well, listen, you've been quiet, and then you come out with about three RNSs in one today. So it's been very busy, obviously, even though it's been quiet from the market point of view and from investors' point of view. You obviously have not been quiet. You've been very busy the last couple of months. So, listen, we'll dig into the detail of the RNS. Before we do, Roger, for people listening right now who are not familiar with the company, can you just summarise what the company's all about, please?
Well, I think the name gives investors the, you know, that summary, which is African Battery Metals. We're focused in Africa. We're focused on the battery metals sector. We're a junior company at the moment, but we have ambitions to develop a portfolio and become ultimately miners of the battery metals, which are, as everybody knows, going to drive electric vehicles, which is the very strong global growth sector for the next 10, 20 years.
Yeah, okay. So let's go to the title of the RNS. So, proposed acquisition of Cobalt Blue Holdings, proposed acquisition of Regent Resources Interest Corporation, and a conditional placing at 3p to raise some money. So, and a proposed capital reorganization. So, take us through this, Rod, from top to bottom, if you could.
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a long time to putting this deal together. I think it's transformational for the company. As you say, we are acquiring two vehicles. Each of those vehicles owns some assets. RRCC and its subsidiary RRIC own a cobalt nickel exploration license in the Ivory Coast. We're acquiring that in its entirety for the payment in stock. We're doing the same acquiring from Cobalt Blue Associates, a company called Cobalt Blue Holdings, Inc., which is the BVI-listed company, not the one in Australia, I should say, but we're acquiring that, and that has a series of cobalt nickel exploration assets in Cameroon, and these assets are very close to a project called Nkamuna, which is the largest, I think, the largest undeveloped cobalt reserve in the world. So, you know, two assets in two very attractive geographies, both in having nickel as well as cobalt, diversifying country risk and adding some nickel to the portfolio.
Yeah. Well, take us into the detail of, first of all, let's go into the two details first, because Regent Resources, they've got a big hitter involved there, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, the guy that people with a longer memory will remember is Stephen Detels, who was the architect of Uramin, which is the massively successful uranium company that was taken out for about, I think, $2.5 or $3 billion back at the top of the uranium boom. He also was behind Oriol, which was taken out by Metchell, the Russians, a stainless steel materials company, and Caledon, the Australian coking coal. So, Steve Detels and Ian Stalker, who are two dominant characters in RRCC, are becoming significant shareholders in ABM. And I hope the market will see that they are very important to the future of the company.
Yeah, and at what level are these resources at the moment, what they've got there?
They're early stage exploration, but they're very prospective in the Ivory Coast. As our circular says, there's been some work by independent geologists which have returned up to 0.2% cobalt and about 0.7% nickel. And the Cameroon assets surround Nkamuna, not surround, that's too strong, but are contiguous in part and very close to Nkamuna, which is, again, about a 0.2% cobalt and about 0.7% nickel cobalt reserve, which was owned by Juvit, a Canadian company. So, you know, very prospective areas. But, yeah, you know, early stage exploration at this stage.
Yeah, okay. Well, take us through the other bits, if you want, Roger. What else should shareholders or potential shareholders know about here?
Well, look, I think, you know, having these very important guys joining the company, joining the shareholder base, they do have the right to nominate directors, so they will have representation on the board. I think to make it easier for shareholders, I always get confused by the point and the zeros. We're having 100-for-1 consolidation, so people should understand 3.25p or 3p, a lot easier than 0.03. I think the other things we note in the circular is we will review the existing portfolio and how it fits with our battery metals focus.
Okay, and you're raising what, £200,000?
Oh yeah, thank you. Yeah, sorry. You know, we're actually raising it's 250 in total, because we're raising 200 through a placing, but Regent Resources, RRCC, is putting $50,000 of cash into the vehicle we acquire, RRIC. So that was a means for them to put some money into the deal, as well as to put an asset, and we're paying for both the cash and the asset through payment in stock to the vendors.
Wow, it's your business has changed and progressed and evolved quickly in the last couple of months, isn't it?
Well, I think this is something we've been working on, you know, for a long time, which is why we've been quite quiet. And I hope the market agrees that, you know, with the board and myself, that, you know, this is a transformational deal. Deep-pocketed shareholders will support bringing in good quality assets, diversifying country risk, adding some nickel to cobalt, you know, strengthening the shareholder base, and we're set to go.
Okay, so what's next operationally then, Roger?
We will do some early stage exploration and report on the two assets. We'll report that back to the market. I just alluded to a strategic review of our existing portfolio, which again, you know, we will report back. And then I think the quality of the guys that are coming into the company means that they see access to some very high quality deal flow. So, you know, I don't think the company will be staying still on that front either.
Absolutely. Marvellous stuff. All right. Well, Roger, listen, there's a lot to digest there, but if people are liking the sound of this progression you're making, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think the focus on the battery metal sector, you know, strong secular growth in demand for the metals to drive electric vehicles. I think we've got a good management team, which we've added to through the strength of the shareholder base. And we will have news flow coming out progressively over the next few months on these assets and changes to the portfolio as we move forward.
Marvellous stuff, Roger. Good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on. So hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Dan Gooding, Chief Executive Officer of Nuformix. That's NFX ticker. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Now, we haven't spoken since you've had your financial results out, your first set you've released since you've been a fully listed company. So we'll go into some highlights from that in a bit. Before we do, Dan, for people listening right now, say they're new to the podcast or don't know anything about the company, can you summarise what is Nuformix all about, please?
Yeah, of course. Well, Nuformix is a pharmaceutical drug development company. What makes us different is that we're developing new treatments based on known drugs. So we have two lead programs, one in the oncology supportive care space and one in fibrosis. So we're developing known drugs towards doing innovative things for unmet needs in those sectors.
Yeah, and this is different in a certain way. It disrupts the model a bit, and because it allows. I'm actually reading this from your website. So that, I mean, the advantage in this is it's a reuse of existing safety data. Is that right?
Yeah, I think, you know, one good way to look at it is that it mitigates a lot of the risk that you typically associate with pharmaceutical R&D. So two of the major risks in those kinds of investments are safety. and efficacy, you know, the a drug working in the envisaged clinical trial for which is being conducted. So right from the start, we can discharge the safety risk. We know a known drug is safe. We've got data on that. And so we can very quickly move into patients, you know, without any concerns about safety aspects that one might typically have. But also when it comes to the clinical trials that may well be done later, you know, we've got a much more informed position about what a known drug might do against that unmet need in the disease and its likelihood of being successful in doing that. So overall, we can take a much more risk mitigated view on developing the programs that we have forward.
Okay, and so you've got NXP001 is the lead product, is that right?
That's one of them. That's the one that's going into the oncology supportive care space.
And you've got NXP002, which is about fibrosis. And,
that's right.
I suppose we just concentrate on those for now because you've got other things going on. People check out the website for more details. So take us through some of the highlights from your financial results there and your interview. Take us through operationally where you are on these two programs, please, if you could.
The results describe the period where we completed our reverse takeover of Leverett. They also describe that same period where we successfully conducted a placing of new shares in the company for $2.3 million. So since that period, we've then focused on adding to the team at the company, putting the right people in place to support the company's aspirations going forward. So we've added to the board. We've also created an advisory team. And then our main focus has been deploying that investment into the two LOO programs that we've just discussed.
Marvellous. Okay, well, let's look at, let's go back, you know, go forward. I mean, that's a historical document, of course, but you announced a deal for NXP001 recently, and that announces certain sort of milestone payments. So what is the strategy, finance strategy going forward then?
I think we've been consistent with our statements in the past regarding how we would fund future research development from licensing income. The deal that you've just mentioned is one such example where we've signed a deal out-licensing China marketing rights for our first lead program, NXP001. Certainly, during Nuformis's early development stages, we hope to continue that in terms of supporting R&D expenditure using our income. We have a very low burn rate. That's always been part of our strategy. And above our operational costs, any additional investment we make is solely into intellectual property and research and development, primarily for those lead programs to which we're committed. So our investment here really ensures that we deliver against these key commercial milestones, particularly against NXP001, but also it maximizes the future value of those assets by validating additional commercial optionality for those lead programs.
Okay, so I'm reading in financial report that you got sort of two milestones. The first one triggers a payment of £500,000, and a further one down the line is a further £2 million. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So those milestone payments will come when we present the data that triggers those payments. They are due from New Summit Biopharma. New Summit Biopharma is our Chinese licensed partner, somebody who we've worked with for 4 years and have continued to work with them sort of post their acquisition by Yatai Pharmaceuticals. So clearly they're now part of a much bigger group and have much greater resources available. New Summit Bio were also cited in our prospectus as a current development partner. They've already taken on three of our co-crystal-based products in the past, and we've received $400,000 in the past from them in terms of IP licensing fees. So, you know, they're a well-known partner to us. They have a track record in terms of the technology working in their hands, but also in making associated license payments too. So we've got a lot of confidence in those guys to deliver.
Okay, and are you on schedule for this next sort of milestone?
Our first milestone is forthcoming. We're currently awaiting the results of studies which are just wrapping up in China, which will trigger the first payment. We are slightly behind schedule on this. We've got a slight delay in achieving that first milestone as we decided to include some additional prototypes in the study to validate NXP001's wider commercial potential. So the data that we're generating will not only trigger commercial payments, but it would also provide a stronger data set as we then look to go off and secure further out-licensing agreements for other territories for NXP001.
Well, do you know what? You just read my mind there. I was saying that obviously it's going well in China, and I was going to ask about the rest of the world, but that will commence, soon, will it?
Yeah, I think once we've got the first data set, you know, we can then take a really strong view in terms of our technology and certainly in its application to enabling the development of that product. It puts us in a really strong position to go back and revisit previous discussions we've had with other licensing partners in other territories. This is a key piece of data that we've been waiting for to continue commercialization of NXP001, but also to generate the funds which we're reinvesting back into R&D.
Okay. Let's quickly touch on NXP002. Of course, that's not as developed as NXP001. What's happening there at the moment then, Dan?
Well, we expect in the second half of 2018 to read out on our preclinical programs in IPF. We're doing a special study in some human IPF tissue. This study is really interesting because the data puts us really, really close to patients. So we're able to take a much more informed view as to whether this drug is going to have an impact in this disease because of the type of tissue that we're using. So our initial data was very positive, and we expect that to be further confirmed in a wider study, which is just reaching a conclusion. And of course, we'll keep investors informed regarding that result as well.
Okay, marvellous stuff, Dan. I suppose, you know, this podcast is aimed at investors, so investors always think about the monetary aspect of it, even though it does a lot of good elsewhere, of course, and saves people lives, these drugs. But it's worth asking you, on a commercial level, you know, what do you know about the size of the markets for these drugs?
Well, these markets themselves are relatively young because the fibrosis space itself, there aren't many approved treatments that have reached the market already. That's why there's such an unmet need in that disease space. But one can take a look at two things. You can look at some of the products that are out there already, but also some of the deals that have been done for products that may well end up being successful in treating diseases in the future. So let's look at the products initially. You've got two products out there at the moment called pirfenidone and nintedanib. They're both used currently to treat IPF. They have combined sales already of well over $1 billion, and these are for treatments that have, you know, arguable minimal efficacy, but also very high cost. One can also look then at assets that have been hoovered up by drug companies looking to get into the fibrosis space. One can take a view on deals such as the acquisition of Promedior, for example. You know, these give an indication as to, you know, where we're looking to get to. The first two marketed products validate the commercial opportunity. The Promedior deal, which I gave an example of, that gives people a view on where New Formics would like to get to in terms of being able to be successful in a similar transaction out licensing an asset such as NXP002.
One final thing to do, or three final things to do, and that's if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, I think the three reasons are relatively unchanged from the reasons that we've given in the past. The only difference, I think, is since we last spoke, is that we're further along the track with the development of both our lead programs. So one reason would be the strategy is clearly working. Number two would be that we're close to releasing data on our two lead programs. Thirdly, we've recently announced collaborations which broaden our product pipeline and build greater value into the company, and we have more of those coming. So they would be my three reasons.
Yeah, it's also worth mentioning, Dan, I know from an investor point of view and investors like this, that you have skin in the game as well. I'm looking at your website, I don't know if this is accurate, but just over 8% of the company. So you are aligned to shareholders as well, aren't you?
Oh, massively. You know, myself and colleagues, Joanne Holland, you know, Chief Scientific Officer, co-founded New Formics around 8-9 years ago. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think it's important that investors understand that, you know, we're absolutely, you couldn't be more committed to the success of the company.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Dan, like you said, you've got quite a few sort of milestones coming up in the not-too-distant future. So hopefully we'll chat off the back of one of those. Look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Definitely. Thanks, Justin. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Landor Resources. Of course, I had Richard Prickett on the podcast yesterday. It's LND. At four, Big Dish. Our ticker there is Dish. Hopefully you can get them on the podcast very soon coming on. At three, Predator Oil and Gas Holdings, PRD. Please do some research on that. And Big Dish, I've got, you know, in that to research on all companies you look at. But I mean, it's been, I wrote a blog about them on the weekend, a PRD, and I think it's quite interesting. Listen, I'm not offering investment advice. I'm just saying do some research. The more research you do, the better you become an investor. And I found that. And, you know, if you do more than the next guy, you'll be better than them, generally. Like anything in life. The more you practice, the better you get. At two, Faron Pharmaceuticals, F-A-R-N. And number one, most followed company. They released an RNS today, actually, and I think they're flying today. Let me just check what the share price is. They were up by 26%. Have they gone any further? Because they had planning permission. Oh, 26, yeah. So SCC approves planning application for Brockham. Set up 26% today. Okay, and the number one most followed company was Angus. Yeah, that was Angus Energy. ANGS. I'd lost myself there. All right. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Innova Derma. Appointment of CEO and routes to be arranged in Tesco's. Oh. At four, Two Shields Investments. Increased interest in Cobalt Blue Holdings. At three, Two Shields Investments. Sale of 49% interest in Cobalt Blue Holdings, which, of course, ABM took a part of. Roger, African Battery Metals. At two, Savannah Petroleum. Signature of MOU with the Republic of Niger. And that's, of course, Andrew's on the podcast earlier talking about that. And number one, it's Motif Bio. Notice of allowance for two US Iclipim patents. And hopefully Graham's come on the podcast very soon. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.